so much, Corey. I'm so happy to be here. Thanks so much for having me on your podcast.
Appreciate you connecting with us and finding time to meet with me and with our viewers. Could you tell us a little bit about what you do as a coach with regard to both alcohol and drug recovery and what kind of a practice that you now have?
So I'm a narcissistic abuse recovery coach. So I basically help people who have had relationships or family members who are narcissistic and the survivors of the abuse to heal, set boundaries, and live life on their own terms. I don't so much deal with like addiction recovery, but there is a big component of what I do with my clients that has to do with repressed emotions. And a lot of the times, you know, people's repressed emotions can manifest either as like physical pain, mystery illnesses, and sometimes they can manifest as addictions as well. So I've had quite a few clients who, you know, were raised by narcissists or in very long-term relationships with narcissists who turn to alcohol and, you know, drug addiction to numb out the pain, obviously. And a lot of the times by doing the inner emotional work, they've been able to, you know, get through that and not have to depend on those substances to cope with the day-to-day stuff.
Coming back to the beginning, we're using a word narcissistic behavior. Could you tell our audience exactly what that means in terms of the usual application of the word?
A narcissist is basically somebody who, you know, they don't get diagnosed, first of all, right? So like, I know there's a lot of people that say like they have to get professionally diagnosed, but the thing with narcissists, they don't think anything is wrong with them, so they're not going to go to a therapist. And so a narcissist is somebody who really, you know, has a very fragile ego, and they will abuse people emotionally and like mentally in order to get what they want from their target. And their goal is narcissistic supply. So that's your emotional reaction, your time, your energy, your resources, engagement in like pointless conversations and stuff like that. Basically any energy and attention that you exert towards this person is what they're feeding off of. And, you know, they'll try to control you emotionally, financially sometimes. There's a lot of these traits that are like common where like they're arrogant and self-centered and selfish and stuff like that. But sometimes it's not that obvious to notice, right? Like they might manipulate you by being this perpetual victim and like the world is against them and, you know, they need your help. And that's how they kind of rope you in emotionally. And so basically there's like a cycle of abuse, love, bomb, devalue, discard. So they'll be nice to you, then they'll be terrible to you, then you're dead to each other, and then they rinse and repeat. And like basically that is the pattern that you're going to notice if you're dealing with a narcissist. So
it kind of reminds me that when people go to treatment for alcohol and drug abuse, for substance use disorder, often they say the family is the patient and the patient is the family. Because when someone goes in for treatment to try to recover and get on their feet after a bottom, often they go back into a situation that was their trigger for using, and it's very hard to do that. Do you ever get the opportunity to meet with the people who are practicing the narcissistic principles you just described to try to affect change in them as well as the person that's coming to you for help?
No, absolutely never. Not. No. When I was like very early on in, as a coach, I decided to try it out just to see what would happen. It was just like a huge mistake. Like it was just, because the thing with narcissists is they don't think that anything's wrong with them. They would rather blame everybody else for the problems that they're causing. And they don't like self-reflect, right? So like a narcissist is not going to listen to me. A narcissist is not going to, you know, pay money to get my help because they don't care to change. They don't ever really change their behavior. They just change their targets. I coach the survivors of the abuse on how to basically like repel narcissists and not give them the supply that they're looking for so that they can actually heal and move on with their lives and not be a target of that abuse moving forward.
Well, two thoughts come to my mind with that. One is I'm familiar with the 12-step program of Al-Anon. Some of the principles espoused in the 12-step program in Al-Anon is to try to just control your behavior as opposed to everybody else's behavior. Because if somebody's behaving as a narcissist, trying to change them is futile because it just isn't something that's going to happen. Ever have people working with either ACA or Al-Anon or any of the codependent kind of programs? Do they go to those programs as well?
I actually have a few clients in my current group now that are in the Codependence Anonymous. And I've had a few past clients that have done the 12-step Al-Anon thing as well.
You know, when somebody goes to treatment and they hit bottom, a light bulb sometimes will go off.
Exactly. Yeah. Like the person who is looking for the help needs to want the help, first of all. And so, you know, it's just really focusing on yourself and your healing journey. A lot of the times they have narcissistic family members who would never, you know, want them to get help for the abuse that they're putting their family member through, right? So it's like a lot of the times it's just kept very quiet and like not something that's talked about with the family, because you can't talk to a narcissistic family about that kind of stuff, of course, right? So it's, you know, and then in terms of like an event that happens, a lot of the times, like I usually am the last resort for the majority of my clients because they've tried everything, right? Like they will have been in therapy for several years. And unfortunately, a lot of therapists don't understand the dynamics of narcissistic abuse, and they can give advice that can be re-traumatizing. Not all therapists, but a lot of, like, I get so many clients that have been through this song and dance with therapists where it's like, oh, that's your mother. You need to understand her childhood. And I'm not going to give you any tools to, you know, manage your own emotions and get actual help. So I, you know, it's, and I've been through it myself too, where I just did not get the help I needed. And so pretty much I've created, you know, my coaching to be what I needed back then so that, you know, other people can have access to it now. And, you know, a lot of the times it's, sometimes there is like this one final straw that happens with my potential client and, the narcissist in their life where it's like, okay, like that's it. I need to deal with this once and for all. Like this is the straw that broke the camel's back. I need to heal from this and move forward. A lot of the times it's chronic pain that brings people my way as well, because it's like the repressed emotions are literally what caused the physical symptoms in a lot of my clients, which is what happened with me as well. So it's like when they reach a point where they cannot take the pain anymore and they know that I deal with the mind-body connection, and, you know, I kind of give the clues out there that maybe the reason you're in pain is because of the abuse that you've been through. You know, something kind of clicks and they're like, okay, let me try this, because I've kind of tried everything else. So, yeah.
So if somebody comes to you and they need help and they've been through therapy and they've the last straw, as you say, what are some of the things that you do with them? What are some of the things that you implement to try to help them deal with a life in which the people that are important to them, just they just are not listening to the same music. They're dancing to a different, you know, step.
I have my Bulletproof group coaching program. So it's a small group program. There's also one-on-one coaching too, which is more like, you know, we deal with whatever you're going through in that moment. But the 12-week program is very much structured. So there's like 9 modules to it, and we go through it as a very small group, 8 people or less. And like at first we learn about how a narcissist's mind works pretty much, and like, you know, becoming the human BS detector and being able to recognize manipulation tactics and the patterns that narcissists use to abuse their targets so they can really understand what they've been through. And then we get into understanding like the trauma from the abuse and how, you know, your like mentality is conditioned by the abuse to, you know, be a people pleaser or a perfectionist or, you know, be go, go, go all the time and stuff like that. And then we get into learning about emotions and how they get repressed from the abuse, and then, you know, learning how to release those emotions in a not traumatizing way. And then we get into, you know, rebuilding self-confidence, setting boundaries, and, you know, living your best life. Like basically education, unlearning the conditioning, and, you know, moving forward with life.
So it's a 12-week program. It's all virtual. So anybody, any place on the earth can join and do this. If they have someone, some significant person in their life that, you know, displays these narcissistic behaviors or even tendencies, they just want to be able to deal with them better and manage their own affairs in such a way that they disconnect from the crazy.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't think the crazy is a clinical word. So strike.
I'm not a clinician, so we can use crazy.
Okay, good. I've gotten in trouble using that word, but you know, I talk the way I talk, but I don't mean it in a you know, in a sense to disparage anybody. For me, when I drink or I drug, I can't stop. And I think most of the folks that listen to our podcast look at abstinence, refraining from drinking or drugging, as kind of being a pretty important thing. As a matter of fact, in the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, the first step is realizing that you just can't do that at all. If I could moderate my behavior, I would have moderated it a long time ago, because I'd love to go out, have dinner with somebody, and somebody I'm with orders a glass of wine or a martini or something. I just can't do that. The world of alcohol and drug recovery is a world in which abstinence is a centerpiece of being able to get involved with the discovery of the narcissistic tendencies of family members, how to deal with that, how to deal with their bosses, how to deal with their children or spouses or parents or whatever might be the influences in their life. But putting down the drink or putting down the drug is kind of the first step to being able to deal with that. Because when your head is kind of up your, you know what, it's very hard to process any of the information that smart people like yourself provide. One of the things that happens when you go into a rehab is the first thing that you do is you detox. If you need the detox, if you've been drinking or drugging, they make sure that your brains are functioning in such a way that you'll be able to absorb the information. So the connection between that world and your work is not really something that's directly connected, even though the behaviors are certainly something that anybody in alcohol and drug recovery are familiar with, people that are manipulative and narcissistic and unreasonable. And probably in a large majority of those cases, that behavior is one of the triggers that creates a good environment within which to abuse alcohol and drugs. What kind of advice, you know, we want to give them a little bit of free advice right now and maybe a teaser towards doing some better things for themselves.
The first thing is like radical acceptance. You have to accept that the narcissist in your life is exactly who they are. And I know how hard that can be, especially when it's a parent. Like, and I lived it. Like, my mother was a narcissist. She passed away 4 years ago. She took all of her grudges with her to her deathbed. So, I mean, they do not change. And you just really have to accept that this is who this person is, and there's nothing I can do about it. There is no combination of words that I can say to this person that's going to make them understand or start behaving reasonably. So you have to really reach that point of radical acceptance and, you know, educate yourself about narcissism and the patterns and the behaviors. And, you know, that in itself can help you not take it so personally, because if it wasn't you as the target, it would be anybody else. You know what I mean? So it's not anything wrong that you did. And it's not that there's something wrong with you. The issue is the narcissist thinks that it's okay to treat people like this. So that's like just one of the most fundamental things for you to understand as a survivor for the people who are listening. And, you know, then it's really all about processing your emotions and just understanding that your emotions are messengers. They're like your GPS system. So, you know, I'll give the example of like anger, right? If a narcissist does something to anger you, right? Because they do so many things that would piss anybody off, really. And you express that anger that like, okay, that was not okay. Then the narcissist will basically point the finger at you and tell you, you're overreacting, you're unhinged, you're this, you're that, like you're way too sensitive, da 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 da. And then that kind of makes you repress that anger. And then you miss out on the message of what it was going to tell you, that like, a boundary was crossed, something not okay happened here. So it's just so important to not villainize any emotion and to accept whatever emotions are coming up for you. Start processing those emotions, right? Whether it's anger, whether it's sadness, whether it's grief, because there's so much grief with narcissistic abuse too, right? You have to grieve who you thought this person was, right? In a romantic relationship, you have to grieve who they presented to you as at the beginning stages of that relationship. If it's a parent, you have to grieve the parent that you never really had. You have to grieve your childhood. There's so many emotions that are repressed. And by actually allowing yourself to pay attention to your emotions, first of all, and accept your emotions and actually feel and process them, that gives you the space for clarity to be able to stay grounded in reality and make a decision on, you know, whether you need to go no contact with this person, or if that's not legally possible, or, you know, practically possible for you in that moment, setting some sort of boundary to protect yourself from that person. It's not an overnight process, and it's baby steps. And, you know, just like one day at a time, one emotion at a time, and just also understanding that you're not alone. There's so many people that go through narcissistic abuse, and it's you know, once you start kind of like seeing other people's stories of what they've been through, it almost always kind of sounds exactly the same because like they use the same tactics. So
it's funny. The first part, accepting, you know, the behavior that this is what's going on, sounds like the first step of the 12 steps. What you're doing is very similar to what we learn in that processing, you know, what's going on. The concept of you're not being able to control everything that happens in the world is an important component. They refer to it as a higher power, and that can mean anything you want. It can mean a God, it can mean religion, it could mean spirituality, it could mean that just the people that you connect with. And you mentioned connection as being really important, connecting with people that, you know, have their balance, people that have gone through it and have come out the other side feeling okay and not being impacted on a day-to-day basis by the person. And in a way, that person is the drink or the drug, because, you know, disconnecting from that is important. So your head can get clear and you can process what you're feeling and take responsibility for any part that you might have had. If you were going to talk to young Adriana, maybe pick a year, 8 years old, 10 years old, 12 years old, whatever age that you think is most important, and you could talk to young Adriana and tell her something now that you're not that age anymore, in terms of advice or things that you've learned or maybe something you'd want young Adriana to know, what might it be?
Oh, man, there's so much, but I think I would probably start off with there is nothing wrong with you. You are not the problem. You are not causing the problems. You are innocent in all of this. You are just a child. And this woman, your mother, is supposed to be protecting you, and she's not doing that, and she's causing the harm. So don't blame yourself, and things are going to get better, and just do not ever give up.
Adriana, I'm really grateful for your appearing with us on Crosstalk. We'll share your link and any other information that you provide to us with our audience. And thanks again for being on Crosstalk.
Thanks so much for having me.